In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
Welcome, everybody. This is the Energemetra 6 podcast. We are on episode 11. And Luke has agreed to read one of our main characters going forward. That's Andrew, so he's here. Mel's here because she's a total sweetheart and has offered to just read one line. I have second and third here. Second to read Shannon and Shauna, and third to read Ty. And that is what we're about here today. We're on chapter 10 of Bright Star. The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value-for-value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you. And without further ado, let's dig in. This is Bright Star, Chapter 10. Take it away, Mel.
The most precious substances in the universe are forged in its most violent events. The same is true of its greatest men. The Ideographies, Telestry Canon.
As they made their way across the city to the spaceport, no one seemed to pay them special attention. Whether it was because of Loredan's absence or simply that Nate's ordeal in the Telestry was over, the world seemed a shade lighter, and the people were friendly instead of awed or curious. Nate had his eye on the crowds, trying to see if Loredan had set someone else following them, but he didn't recognize the same person twice. When they reached the spaceport, the crowd was thinning. A many-story concrete wall surrounded the spaceport proper. Their path had taken them to one of its primary gates, and they had no problem getting to the landing fields. The field itself was simply a huge paved lot, made of the same concrete as the walls surrounding it. The concrete was only broken up by slidewalks and a single control tower that seemed to touch the sky at its center. The spaceport had been built to allow travelers easy access to the city, so there were no physical barriers to prevent people from walking onto the field, and the few guards he saw seemed focused on adults and had no real attention for 3 teens. Once there, it took some time to find the vessel they were looking for among the others. It had set down far to the back of the field, away from the commercial shipping and the Telestry's official transports. It was apparent from hundreds of yards away which vessel it was, however. Every other vessel on the field was shaped more or less like a traditional rocket, with cigar-shaped bodies and aerodynamic lines designed to take them out of the atmosphere with as little air resistance as possible. Some stood on end, others flat on one side. But however mismatched their size, and whatever their orientation, they were proportionally the same. There was only one vessel at the far edge of the landing field that looked like a squashed egg. No particular attention had been paid to aerodynamics, but the aesthetics of the vessel were strangely beautiful. It had an obvious bridge on one side with a gigantic, perfectly transparent window taking up an entire third of its flattened radius, top to bottom. The ship's finish was reflective, its seamless surface almost as polished as a mirror, making it painful to look at where it reflected sunlight. Instinctively, as the three walked toward it, Nate opened his senses to Energemetra 6, looking at the world around him to see what ordinary sight might miss. Nearly everything looked as he would have expected. The colors were vibrant, the fields surrounding every object ebbing and flowing to a rhythm he couldn't quite catch. He felt the unique mix of color and flavor of Energemetra 6 on each material around him, and gloried in the sensation. Then he focused his attention ahead. The ship in front of them outshone everything else. It was just barely less bright than the sun behind Nate's head. But because it was Energemetra 6 and he wasn't seeing it purely through his eyes, it didn't actually blind him. Nate nudged Ty. "Look at E6. Ty paused for a moment, then he whistled softly.
"Whoa."
Keevan stopped beside them, and after a moment, he too let out a soft gasp. Nate and Ty both looked at him sharply.
"Hey,"
Ty said.
"I didn't think you could use E6.
Keevan blinked in surprise, then looked at them sheepishly. "Well, yeah. Not enough for the telestry, but I can see. That really is amazing." They all stared at the vessel for a long moment before Nate shook his head and released his grasp on the fields, starting forward again. "Come on," he said. "We're needed." As they drew closer, the three began to hear faint shouting coming from their objective. They increased their pace, and before long the words began to come clear. The louder of the two voices hollered,
"Don't you understand? No!"
The reply was too soft for them to catch, but before they could go more than a few more steps, the first voice came back again.
"There is no fuel. We don't have unobtainium here, and I don't care where you're from. Either you'll have to pay the yard fee or you'll have to leave. We don't have room for derelicts, and I already told you, I only deal with adults. Where's your captain?"
Nate slowed to a walk as he approached the vessel, where a boy his own age but built like a tank stood on the boarding ramp, facing the spaceport official, who was on the ground, hands on hips, glaring up at them. The vessel hovered above the ground, resting on a cushion of Energemetra 6 that left only a slim boarding ramp to link it to the concrete. The ramp was made of the same polished silvery metal, but with a dark, ribbed walking surface leading up to a featureless hole in the side of the sphere. The boy glanced up with hard brown eyes as Nate and the other two approached, smiled in greeting, then turned his attention back to the man on the ground.
"Sir, we can't even leave the star system without stabilized flerovium. We've spent the last week looking for salvage, but everything up there is picked clean. We're out of water and air, surely..."
The man cut him off. "This is the third time you've asked to refill your water and air. Do you have the marks or not?"
The boy seemed about to speak again, but Nate cleared his throat, and the official turned to him.
"Great! Another kid! What do you want?"
Nate smiled. "Ever heard the saying, two problems cancel each other out? I'd like to talk to your guest."
"Guest, ha!"
The official snorted, but he stepped to one side and Nate walked up to the foot of the boarding ramp. He smiled in greeting at the boy above him on the ramp, and the boy nodded in return and paused expectantly. Nate asked, "Do you have enough air and water for a day?" The boy nodded slowly.
"Yeah, but we can't get a whole lot further than high orbit without fuel."
His lips thinned in obvious frustration. Nate nodded in acknowledgement, then said, "I'm Nate. Take us up and I'll show you where to look. 12 hours maximum." The boy looked at him thoughtfully, then at Ty and Keevan.
"I'm Andrew Logan. 12 hours is all the air we have left. And with the three of you along, that's only 6 up and 6 back.
He hesitated, obviously thinking, then shrugged.
"Okay, let's go."
Nate beckoned to Ty and Keevan, who were still waiting beyond the unhappy port official, and the two hurried to join him as Nate turned and led the way into the ship. From behind, as they left, the port official called,
12 hours, eh? I'll have the wreckers waiting."
Surprisingly, both airlock doors were open. When they'd all passed through, Andrew smacked a palm-sized panel on the wall in the corridor beyond without ever slowing down, causing the ramp to begin retracting, and the inner doors of the airlock to slide together. Looking back, Nate saw a curved metal hatch that matched the outside of the ship, sliding down from above, before the inner doors snapped shut and sealed. Unlike the airlock, which was composed completely of the same metal as the outside of the vessel, the corridor floor was made of what looked like some kind of polished hardwood. The wall on Nate's right was smooth from floor to ceiling, with support ribs protruding an inch or two every 10 or 15 feet. The wall had a light inset texture and an off-white surface that looked almost rubbery, as if a layer of some kind of resin had been sprayed onto the surface of the ship's inner bulkhead, then allowed to harden. The corridor's other wall contrasted sharply, covered primarily in plant growth of several different types, growing directly out of the wall's surface. The plants were variegated by height, with leafy greens on the bottom and a row of flowers in the middle. The greenery was spangled with flowers of white and light pastels, even at the levels above and below the decorative stripe in the middle. Vines grew along the ceiling, then twined down trellises hanging with fruit. Nate thought he recognized grapes in one spot. The corridor was wide enough for the plants to take up a foot or two of its width without impinging on the walkway, and the extra room made the corridor more a living area than a simple utilitarian passageway. The light that filled the space was almost completely colorless, which might have been partially to optimize the plant's growth, but it also created a clean, airy feeling. Interspersed with the greenery were hatches every few feet, with an occasional gray access terminal. Once, as they walked down the curved corridor, Nate saw a shallow, glass-faced cabinet filled with, of all things, books. Otherwise, it ran directly along the outside of the ship, to the bridge, with a slight kink to the left to take it along the back of the bridge, roughly 90 degrees around the circumference of the vessel from the airlock. As Nate entered the compartment, Andrew was saying,
"You heard?"
Nate was confused for a moment, then he saw the room's other two occupants. Two girls, as slim as Andrew was stocky, sat at control stations, both busy with the displays in front of them. The closer of the two looked up, and her sharp features pinched into a guarded expression, as her curious violet eyes examined each of them in turn.
"Hope you're right, Drew."
Andrew ran a hand through blonde hair that matched the girl's almost perfectly, though his was cropped close to his head, while they wore theirs long, pulled back into braids. The closer of the two girls eyed Nate and the other two warily, while the other offered them a warm smile. That smile went all the way to her eyes, which were brown and reminiscent of Andrew's, though the look in them was softer. Andrew motioned to seats that lined the rear of the room.
"Welcome to Adamant. These are my sisters, Shannon."
Andrew motioned to the closer of the girls.
"And Shauna."
He pointed to the girl on the other side of the bridge. Andrew stopped for a moment, then shook his head.
"I'm dying to know why you'd want to go up on a ship that only has a few hours of air left. It's not as if we have anything to offer you."
Nate shrugged and smiled. "We need a ride. If we show you where you can get enough fuel and salvage to get you going, you can take us where we need to go." Andrew nodded, thoughtfully.
"I think we can agree to that. You sure you know where to find something useful? We're not pirates, mind, and if you had any similar ideas, put them out of your head. We're not toothless, either."
Nate nodded back. "Yeah, this may be more complicated than you'd like, but I know where we'll find something." Shannon scowled at Andrew, and, ignoring Nate and the other two, she said,
"Drew, this is a bad idea. We shouldn't be taking outsiders aboard. We can..."
Andrew frowned. Without waiting for her to finish her sentence, he cut in.
"We can what? Spend what little resources we have left with just as little to show? Beggars can't be choosers, Shan. If they know where we can find honest salvage, we need it."
Andrew turned to Nate and the other two.
Find a seat. It's time to go.
Nate, Ty, and Kevin all hurried to do as Andrew asked, though Nate noticed that both made a point of sitting on the opposite side of the bridge from Shannon. Once they were seated and their restraints fastened, Andrew said,
"Crew, acknowledge ready for liftoff."
The two girls immediately responded, one after the other.
"Shannon, ready."
"Shauna, ready."
A long silence followed before Nate realized he was expected to respond as well. "Nate, ready. Sorry." Kevin and Ty echoed him, and after a moment, Andrew said,
"Arms at your sides, chin to your chest. Initiating thrust in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Nate felt as if a giant hand pressed down on him, and for a moment he was disoriented. He had never experienced the same sensation on his trip to the Telestry with Loredan. Obviously, this vessel didn't have inertial dampening. Pressed into his seat, Nate watched the sky ahead of them darken slowly over the next 10 minutes before the pressure eased. It never reached a point where Nate felt as if he couldn't breathe, but 10 minutes of constant acceleration was enough for him to get truly uncomfortable. After the pressure finally did ease, there was a moment of silence. Then Andrew craned his neck out of his chair to look back at Nate.
"So, where are we going?"
Nate asked thoughtfully. "What's the largest man-made object in orbit around Eteria?" Andrew played with his controls for a moment, then shrugged.
"The Behemoth. That's the name they hung on the biggest piece of wreckage that's still in any kind of stable orbit after their Dominion War. That's the one that's been picked clean for centuries, though. We looked through some of the smaller wrecks from that era. It's all been cleaned out. The captain of one of the mining crews headed for the belt told us that they do guided tours of the Behemoth sometimes. Expensive, he said."
Andrew paused, then added,
"The second biggest is the Pole Star, but that's at the Dominion Governor's station."
Nate nodded, then shrugged. "Let's go take a look at the Behemoth." Before Andrew could respond, a voice came over what was obviously the bridge's speaker system.
"Independent vessel, identifier Adamant. This is Dominion Control on the Pole Star. Your current trajectory will take you into restricted space. You must change course. This is the third time you've been warned, Adamant."
Andrew grimaced and did something on his console, then spoke aloud.
"Pole Star Control, this is Adamant. I told you, our propulsion has an unusual thrust profile. If we don't break atmosphere that way, it takes twice as long to make orbit. We have no intention of violating your space, Pole Star. We're changing course now."
Andrew shook his head. After a moment, the pressure was back, pushing Nate into his chair. The pressure of acceleration was enough to make talking unpleasant, even if not impossible. But Andrew told them it would take at least an hour to reach their destination. The only other talking was Ty's attempt to start a conversation with Shauna. He was rapidly cut short when Shannon told him that if he wanted to waste air, he could do it outside. Ty's return jibe was met with silence. After another half hour of what must have been constant acceleration, they hit turnover. Nate could tell because there was a full minute of weightlessness while the ship rotated, punctuated by exclamations from Ty and Kevin. Then the same giant hand pressed him backward into his chair again. When they finally stopped decelerating, Andrew spoke again.
"Don't unbuckle. I don't want to have to peel you off the inside of the window."
The weightless feeling disappeared, and Nate felt himself pulled against his restraints as the vessel slowed more. Meanwhile, Adamant rotated again in weightlessness until Nate could see a point of light ahead of them, slowly growing larger. Andrew turned again to look at him when the behemoth was big enough to take up half of their screen, its shape recognizable as a giant sphere rather than a traditional rocket shape. Even from this distance, they could see the battle damage. But the vessel had been truly massive, and the tiny holes that pocked its surface looked like pinpricks in the light from the system primary behind them. Andrew shot Nate a questioning look.
"So, what now?"
Nate cocked his head thoughtfully as he stared at the behemoth. Eventually, he said, "Go around. Get in its shadow. Over the next few minutes, their vessel moved to do exactly that, rotating smoothly as they moved to always keep the behemoth in the center of their view. When the sun entered the window from the right side, it didn't blind them. The window must have filtered the light, because looking directly at the star wasn't painful or difficult. When they reached the other side of the behemoth and passed into its shadow, the darkness was almost complete. There was no moon behind them, only stars. It was strange, almost eerie, being in total darkness, with only the stars outside for light, and nothing to illuminate the interior of Adamant, except the glowing screens on the control panels of the three pilots. For a moment, Nate frowned in thought, then he again opened his senses to the fields. Colors immediately leaped into focus around and behind him, and he was distracted for a moment by the glow that turned the window into a thin, blurry mist. Then he focused his attention on the behemoth. It wasn't quite like shining a light on the surface. What came to him was more fragmented than that, but outlines and shapes became clear, and Nate scanned the skin of the huge craft. About a third of the way down, he spotted a hole. It must have been quite large. The pinpricks of battle damage were the same on this side as the sunward side, and they were tiny beside the great hole. Nate studied it for a moment, then asked, "Andrew, can you see E6? Andrew turned his head to look at Nate uncomfortably, but from across the bridge, Shauna answered,
"I can see it. There's a hole in that wreck, Andy."
Andrew sat still for a moment, then asked,
"Can you take us in closer?"
Shauna came back almost immediately.
"Aye."
With that, their vessel began to move slowly closer to the hole. As they approached, Nate's estimation of the behemoth's size continued to increase. It grew and grew until he could see that the tiny pinpricks of battle damage were almost the size of their own vessel. At some point, one of their three hosts must have turned on exterior lights, because Nate started to see some detail from the edges of the yawning hole in the behemoth. The closer they got, the clearer the jagged wound in the great wreck became, until finally they hung directly before the huge rent. Andrew whistled.
"Wow, nobody told us about this."
Shannon snorted.
"Yeah, that's because it wasn't there. Remember, Captain Raskowicz said the biggest hole was on the planet side, and this wreck is tidally locked. They claimed a shuttle could fly right through it. This hole is way bigger than that."
"Shauna,"
Andrew said slowly,
"take us inside. Easy does it, and don't bang us up."
They began to creep forward toward the massive hole, and as they approached, Nate focused ahead again. It was, of course, utterly dark inside, but through Energemetra 6 he could make out that whatever crashed into the wreck had made a jagged hole several times deeper than it was wide. Beyond the end of the makeshift tunnel, there was nothing. "It has some kind of cavity," Nate said. "Whatever crashed into it must have ended up on the other side of that... Is that a boat bay?"
"Nope."
Shannon didn't turn her head.
"This wasn't a warship. It was a world ship. The interior was built to be pressurized. The core is hollow. There was a whole ecosystem inside. Captain Raskowicz told us it was built by Enema fanatics. They couldn't bear to go anywhere without living things. Then they were called to aid the Telestry in the war, and, well..."
Everyone on the bridge was subdued, as the ragged edges of the puncture in the behemoth's skin passed silently around them. Only the protruding tips of girders and the twisted corners of sheet metal jutting out of the darkness into full view, as if reaching to snag them. The eerie feeling that had been growing at the back of Nate's consciousness since they passed into shadow grew stronger. Even though the tunnel beyond dwarfed their vessel, it wasn't a perfect cylinder. Instead, the further it extended through the skin of the ship, the narrower it became, making it feel like the walls were closing in on them as they proceeded. As they moved slowly but steadily between the broken bits, Keevan spoke up for the first time since they'd left the surface of Eteria.
"Well, ain't this friendly?"
There was real humor in his voice, even though it was obvious that he was trying to ease his own dread as much as anyone else's. In glancing at Kevin as he spoke, Nate saw again the same toy back in Kevin's fingers, this time flipping nervously between his hands. "What is that?" Nate asked, indicating the object. Kevin now had half hidden in one palm. "Oh, this?" Kevin grinned. "It's my UPT."
"UPT?" Nate repeated dubiously.
"Yeah, if I show it a view of the stars, it can remember the location," he shrugged. "It's just a toy. Keeps my hands busy."
Nate nodded and shrugged as they passed through the tunnel and into the core of the behemoth. Shauna didn't slow as they passed through into the core of the behemoth, continuing on the same vector straight for the opposite side of the sphere. It took almost another 5 minutes to cross the vast gulf at their slow pace. As they moved away from the hole through which they'd entered, the only thing visible against the blackness all around them were tiny spots of light, coming in through holes on the far side of the great world ship that had pierced all the way into its core. The eerie feeling had turned to a nameless, low-level dread, clawing at the back of Nate's mind. Watching the opposing wall of the behemoth slowly resolve itself from a featureless blur into actual terrain with hills and valleys, all covered in dead, flash-frozen vegetation, made the dread worse. It was an entire inside-out world, lifeless and still. Whatever it was that had crashed through the behemoth, creating the giant hole through which they'd entered, was embedded in the frozen earth on the far side of the sphere ahead of them. Nate had expected a hunk of mangled wreckage, but the rear half of the object, protruding from the ground, was strangely untouched. As soon as they were close enough to see it clearly, Andrew let out a soft exclamation. The object bore an almost perfect resemblance to the vessel they themselves were in, but it was several times the diameter.
"Stop!"
Andrew's voice was actually shaking. He turned in his chair to stare at Nate, his expression somewhere between fear and anger.
"Did you know? Did you know what this was?"
With Andrew's words, Nate felt himself pulled against his restraints and the ship stopped moving. Nate looked at Andrew for a long moment, frowning, then shook his head slowly. Andrew's voice rose, and he said,
"Turn us around. Get us out of here."
"Hold on." The authority Nate put into his voice was enough to stop anyone from carrying out Andrew's order, at least for a moment. "First, tell me what you're afraid of, and let me answer your question. No. I had no idea what it was we were going to be facing out here. All I knew was that you'd take me where I need to go and we'd find the salvage you need." Andrew didn't respond immediately. Instead, Shannon snorted in obvious derision and turned her head toward Shauna.
"I knew this was a mistake. Get us out of here, sis. We don't want to be any closer to Resolute than we have to."
Adamant started to turn, and Nate's resolve hardened to steel inside him. He had a job to do. He was utterly certain of it. He said, "I'll have to ask you to leave me here, then. I think something tells me that thing's a problem, and I need to deal with it, or it's going to kill a whole lot of people." Andrew shook his head as he finally answered.
"A problem? Yeah, you might say that. But you don't even know what it is. What makes you think you can deal with it?"
Ty laughed.
"You don't even know who you're talking to, do you?"
Andrew turned his head to Ty and frowned.
"What do you mean, who I'm talking to?"
Ty laughed again.
"He's the bright star."
They had turned fully back toward the hole in the behemoth, and their vessel was starting to move, pressing them gently back against their seats. Andrew's head didn't move, and he sounded blank.
"Bright star?"
Ty was incredulous.
"Duh, the bright star? The long-awaited savior sent to set the universe right? A light in the darkness of infinite space? The one the wild man told us about?"
Andrew sounded bewildered.
"What do you... Wait, Amasthina?"
Ty was even more incredulous now.
"Amasa, what? Where are you guys from anyway? How can you not know about the bright star?"
Andrew ignored Ty and turned his head back to Nate.
We have a, call it a legend. The light in the darkness. It came from, well, somebody we knew. Somebody we really cared about. Went a little crazy. He saw stuff. Some of what he saw came true. He said there would be a light in the darkness come to save us from them. Amasthina, he said.
Nate looked at Andrew steadily. First, tell me what it is you're afraid of. Then turn us around and take me back. All I know right now is that whatever that is, I can't leave it here. Andrew returned his gaze for a long moment, then nodded once.
Shauna, take us back to Resolute.
Shauna spoke tentatively.
You sure, Andy? I mean...
Andrew nodded again.
Yeah.
He looked at Nate again, considering, then said,
I don't even know where to start. I guess if what you want to know is what's in that ship.
Andrew paused. When he continued, his breath was ragged.
Where we come from, it's not like here. People don't live on planets anymore. Not normal people, anyway. The planets have all been taken by them. If they catch you, they turn you into one of the changed. That's what's on Resolute.
He paused again, then shook his head.
People here have no idea. Back home, they hunt us, the way we hunt rats that get into our ships. The only place free people still live is on the ships, and we're always running and hiding. And sometimes they catch us. There won't be any more free humans there soon.
Ty broke in, obviously frustrated.
Yeah, but what are they? What is a change, and how did it get here? And how did you get here? And how do you know that ship's name?
Andrew sighed and shook his head tiredly.
I know the ship's name because they took it from us. How it got here, I don't know. It must have followed us. I don't even know how we got here, much less how they could have followed. We were in a fight. They were chasing us, and I have no idea what happened. There was a huge explosion, and we were somewhere else, somewhere dark. Then the universe opened up, and we were here, and our Fluorovium was just gone. Not that we had much to start with.
Nate saw Ty open his mouth to speak again, but preempted him. Gently, he said, Andrew, you still haven't... Shannon cut him off.
They're monsters. They're worse than the worst thing you can imagine. We don't know what they really are, but when they catch you, you aren't you anymore. You become something else. And they take control of your body and put a computer in your brain. And then you kill the people you love, because killing your friends is better than letting them do the same thing to your friends they did to you.
She choked up for a moment, but then forced herself to continue.
They got Dad 2 years ago. Most of the time when we see one of the changed, they try to catch us, to take us back to them. Dad didn't do that. The next time we saw him, he was waiting for us at one of our secret spots. I barely recognized him.
She went silent then, her gaze fixed forward, tears running down her face. Andrew finished for her.
He tried to kill us all, and...
He turned to look Nate in the eye.
We've never figured out how to kill one of them. The changed are tough, but we've killed a few. It doesn't help, though. When you kill a changed, it just lets one of them that had a hold of it free to come after you. Whatever they are, we can't kill them at all. Our parents tried. They got a changed shut up in a ship and sent in a Mark 7. It was enough firepower to crack a moon. There was nothing left of the ship it was in. The changed was gone, nothing left at all. But when we sent a shuttle to make sure, it was still there. It took the shuttle and tried to come after us. Some people call them shades. Most people just say them. We've never been able to capture one unless it was attached to a changed. And we've never been able to see one clearly.
Nate nodded slowly. So that's it. He sighed in irritation as his understanding of the threat finally clicked into place. This was what he had come here to fight. He knew it. His determination redoubled, but he smiled wryly at Andrew. Sorting through my memories isn't easy. This much I know. Those things can't be left to roam free. Not here. The Energemetra 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. North Arrow Coffee is the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every purchase goes to support organizations like Crisis Pregnancy Centers, whose purpose is to support women in the most difficult situation of their lives. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 to get 10% off with your order.
The advertisements featured did not necessarily represent my endorsements or views.
And that concludes our reading for the day. And now that Luke's reading Andrew, he's going to be here quite a bit. So looking forward to that. Thank you, Luke, for agreeing to do that for us very much. Thank you, Mel, for showing up. Mel's going to be reading another character who we'll be introduced to in the next couple of chapters. And I expect second and third will be here pretty often. So looking forward to next time. Thanks for being here, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.